Blog Talk Radio.
Jeremy Espy, and for the next hour, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And, of course, you will get a heavy dose of our opinion. And if you have an opinion, the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/PGAN. That's blogtalkradio.com/PGAN. You can send email messages to the show at goforth.gan@gmail.com. That's goforth.gan@gmail.com. Expected tonight to be joined by Lisa Wu Hartwell, former Real Housewives of Atlanta star. She's going to come by and talk about what she's up to now. And also the great Herschel Walker, who right now is a part of Strike Force Mixed Martial Art. And also is a great former NFL player. So it definitely should be great to get his insight to see what's going on with Herschel right now. Jeremy?
Paul.
How are you?
Doing, man. You know, congratulations. You know, certainly picked a good one there in Donovan. Glad the Eagles kept him. The way our quarterbacks in Philadelphia are playing, we would have really needed him.
And speaking of quarterback and quarterback play, did you catch the game the other night? Did anybody catch the game the other night? Michael Vick was on fire. I mean, 333 yards passing, 6 touchdowns, 4 by air, 2 on the ground, another 80 yards rushing, as the Eagles dominated the Washington Redskins. 59-28. Yes, yes. 59-28. And if you look at it, the Eagles could have scored more if they really wanted to. We're talking possibly 70 points if they really, really wanted to. And if you look at Michael Vick, I mean, the guy is just off the charts. I mean, goodness gracious. He's playing at an MVP caliber level right now. 11 touchdowns, no interceptions. I mean, the guy seems unstoppable. This is just, if you look at the way he's playing, I mean, the team looks unstoppable. And if you look at this Philadelphia Eagle team right now here today, if you look at this team, they're 6-3 right now, tied with the Giants on top of the NFC East. But if you look at this team right now, the way they're playing, there is an opportunity for a Super Bowl, folks. This team could make it to the Super Bowl, if Michael Vick continues to play the way he is playing. This team could conceivably go to the Super Bowl. And if you look at the NFC right now, you have the Falcons who are on top of the NFC at 7-2, best record in the NFC. But if you look at that, remember one thing. Remember, the Philadelphia Eagles have beaten the Atlanta Falcons. So it could all change who could be on top of the NFC at the end of the day. But if you look at it right now, if the Eagles were to tie the Falcons, the Eagles would have the advantage because they beat the Falcons in the regular season. So if you look at that situation with the Philadelphia Eagles, the way Michael Vick is playing, and if the defense comes around, the defense is playing okay. Not great, but okay. They played well against the Colts and Peyton Manning, and they were decent against the Redskins. If this defense continues to play at a decent level and Michael Vick continues to play off the chart, which is what I believe will continue to happen, you could make a sound and sane argument that the Philadelphia Eagles will be at Cowboys Stadium and in the Super Bowl. What a redemption story that would be for Michael Vick.
I'm letting you carry on a little bit here, partially because I was yawning. And, again, you're getting carried away. You saved McNabb, and I mean, congratulations, McNabb, $78 million and $4 million if you get cut. But let's keep it real, Paul. I mean, don't get me wrong. Michael Vick is playing for the potentially, and with being out, you know, two games with an injury, potentially really is the definitely player of the year. Probably going to be MVP if he continues at this level. But they beat the Redskins, who suck. They still put up 28 points. They still put up 28 points. The defense is still, I mean, you think, because the offense was up 59 points, doesn't mean the defense didn't, again, there were some problems there on that defense. I just say their linebackers are below average, and this is an Eagles defense that's predicated on a much better linebacking corps than what they got. Stuart Bradley ain't getting the job done, period.
Well, I can't say that. I mean, if you look at the past 2 weeks, and I want to point to look at the Colts game for a second there. That first half, the Colts offense was moving the ball regularly on that defense. But in the second half, that Eagles defense stepped up, and Michael Vick played well in that game, but I believe the Eagles defense was the reason they won that game against the Colts. So give this defense some credit. They played well in that football game against the Indianapolis Colts, and they've been playing decent football. And if you look at it against the Tennessee Titans, they were playing some okay football defensively. They just ran into Kenny Britt, and Kenny Britt had a big game. But all of them, for most of that game, they played well, and they dominated the Titans' offense. Well, I'm saying this. I'm not completely sold on the defense, but you can't sit here and tell me, if you look at the NFC, that any team is definitively better than the Eagles. The Falcons, I can't say that. The Saints, I can't say that. The Bears, the Packers?
Oh, no,
I can't
I'm not,
say that.
I don't, I mean,
I can't say that. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers? I cannot say that. So you can't tell me that any of these teams are definitively better than the Philadelphia Eagles. You can't tell me that.
Paul,
and if you can, tell me.
I didn't say that. I just said that what you're saying, you know, it sounds too catchy to me. It sounds like we're going to put a beat to this, and we're going to be singing about it in a day or two. I mean, all I'm saying is slow down. Michael Vick, you know, he is hitting all strides. I'll tell you who I also am impressed with. Not a player and not a coach anymore, but definitely doing a great job broadcasting it. I think Gruden said something. When you listen to it, there's a lot of truth to that. And that is, like, right now, you know, and Michael Vick talked about it today in the papers. It was quoted, you know, pretty much as admitted that, you know, he's been looking at himself now and kind of wondering what might have happened if he would have had a coach like Andy Reid or played in an organization like this his entire career. Because you can definitely see, I don't know Michael Vick the man, and I've been quite outspoken in saying I think that Michael Vick the man versus Michael Vick the athlete are two different people. But Michael Vick, the athlete, with Andy Reid and Marty Morningweg, this is a scary guy. I think, and too, it lends a lot of credibility to Reid and you know what Reid and his organization would be able to do to you know an NFL quote unquote caliber quarterback. I think what he did with Don McNabb speaks for itself, and what he's doing with Michael Vick is, I think, it's unprecedented. He is turning a quarterback who was earmarked, and just he's totally redesigning his game.
Well, he definitely has had a stamp on Michael Vick's game, and this is a game. One play that kind of personifies the new Michael Vick was that play in the third quarter there, where he was looking. They were down by the goal line there. He was looking, had plenty of time, kept looking. Stayed in that pocket, kept looking, and ultimately found Jason Avant in the back of the end zone. That, to me, is the new Mike Vick. That, to me, is a guy who, in years past, probably would have took off and probably would not have the patience to sit back there and wait, and then throw the pass. So, that to me, is the new Michael Vick. And that's the guy right now. I said it before, I'll say it again. He's playing at an MVP caliber level. He is playing possibly and arguably the best football in quarterback right now in terms of the way he's playing. You can make an argument that he is the best quarterback in the game right now, the way he is playing.
Well, I mean, I think what you're seeing, too, is this Michael Vick. Again, I hate to, you know, bring – and I think it's a shame for Donovan McNabb because, you know, Donovan was very responsible for bringing Vick to Philadelphia. But you're looking at this and saying to yourself, you know, this Michael Vick will certainly outpace – if the Eagles re-sign him, he'll have a very memorable Eagle career. This guy – especially on this team, and one of the things Gruden talked about too, which I certainly thought was important to note, was A, how young the players around Vic are, and B, how fast the Eagles' offense is in terms of, you know, speed. You have receivers that are 3 years or less in the league, and all of which are burners. And then running back with Sean McCoy is just coming into his zone, and I think a guy like Vic. I mean, I'll tell you this. We're certainly going to get into this throughout the rest of the season and all offseason. I hate to say, but, you know, I think Vic just played that game right there, which is going to be if you're the Eagles, you really can't let him go.
Some franchise is going to back the truck up and just give Michael Vic the blank check. Is it going
to
be the
Eagles
Vikings
have to be the
one,
and the Eagles have to be the Eagles
well,
have to be the ones to do that.
We'll see. But you mentioned about Gruden and the skill position guys and how young they are. LeSean McCoy, 22 years old. Jason Avant, 27 years old. DeSean Jackson, third year in the league, 23 years old. Jeremy Maclin, second year in the league, 22 years old. If you look at skill position,
Brent Celek.
I didn't even mention Brent Celek, 25 years old. If you look at the age of the skill position player for the Philadelphia Eagles, now, you know, if you're Mike Vick, you have to think about it this way. You got a little debt situation there. So this will probably be your last contract. So you got to make sure you make as much money as possible. But in terms of a purely football decision, in terms of just talking straight football, you might want to stay in Philadelphia with all those weapons. That might be a good idea for you to stay in Philadelphia.
And there's no reason to stay. But, Paul, if you're Vic, too, and you're strategic about this, I don't disagree. There's definitely probably going to be a suitor that will carry – that will give him more than the Eagles could because they – unless the Eagles wanted to do it. But there's also going to be some – there will down the line be some abilities for Michael Vick, should he keep his nose very clean. There will be abilities for him to regain, you know, his marketing stature issue here. And with a guy like tying yourself to an organization like Philadelphia, which is in a big market city, which, you know, that has national appeal, he's going to sell a boatload of jerseys, a boatload of autographs. I think if you have a team around you of intelligent people, you look at, you know, you go to, let's say, an L.A. Raiders or the Minnesota Vikings, where now you're, you know, with an Eagles team, it's as Jeffrey Lurie said, the gold standard of the NFL, but you tie yourself to a coach that is highly respected, highly regarded, very well known to be a character guy, got rid of players because of attitudes. And so I think nationally there will be some appeal to Michael Vick if he says the right things the off season, whereas maybe he does take a little less money and says it wasn't about the money when then he signs, you know, quietly a big contract with Reebok or, you know, back to Nike or to some Adidas. I think if I'm Michael Vick, I look at this and I want to go long term here. If I'm Michael Vick, I'd be present.
Yeah, and you're right here. And in terms of the marketing aspect of things, if you think about it, I mean, Kobe Bryant came back from an accused rape. He came back and Kobe. No one really remembers that. A lot of people forget that.
So I agree.
This guy's image can be rehabilitated. And this guy can definitely have a second chance marketing-wise as well. And regardless, he has to keep his nose clean in order to stay in this league. So if he is smart, and like you said, if he keeps that nose clean, there is a great marketing opportunity, and that is a great point. There is a great marketing opportunity here. And let's just say for some reason Michael Vick gets the Eagles to the Super Bowl and the Eagles win the Super Bowl. I mean, not out of the realm of possibility, but just let's say it happened. I mean, could you imagine marketing-wise what he can do in the city of Philadelphia, a city that is a football town? I mean, the sky is the limit for this guy. Again, the ultimate thing is keeping that nose clean, keeping himself clean, no more parties, no more public parties at least, parties at church, parties at the local community center, parties where in good, savory places, but no public parties, Michael. Stay out, stay home, stay with your fiance, stay with your kids, and if you do that, man, there's a lot of the end of the rainbow is looking very good for you, looking very 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 good for you. Let's take a quick call. Hello, you're on Going For It.
Hello.
Hello, you're on Going For It.
How are you?
Doing well.
Very good. Man, is that an automatic cue? I was listening in, but wanted to say hi. How are you, Cole? How are you, Jeremy? I hope everything is all well. Can't get from New York. Always like to check in and, you know, give my insight on some of the things that go on in the sports world. So, like I said, it's always a pleasure to check in on you guys.
Well, I would appreciate you checking with a sound.
Like I said, there was some automatic cue. I didn't press the key, but you know what? I'm here. So obviously somebody wants me on this air. So I'm just coming to, you know, send my support and just saying hey to you guys.
Thank you for your call. We appreciate the support and the love.
Okay, all right.
I mean, you know, I love for people to call, but I would love for you to call if you have a legitimate point.
Well, you got to remember, Paul, and Paul, you should know better than anybody. Up in New York, you know, things don't exactly go as planned. And what may be isn't always. And as I said, you should be able to preach to the choir on that one because, you've been taken hostage, if you will, by the New York mentality.
I mean, I'm not a big New York guy, but one of the best things that came out of New York is my lovely wife. So, I mean, other than my lovely wife, anything else in New York, you could just keep it because I really want no part of that. But we are now being joined by former Real Housewives of Atlanta star and now actress and now author, Lisa Wu Hartwell. Lisa, how are you?
I'm fabulous. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Now, Lisa, I want to get to the Real Housewives for a second. You were not on the show this season. You actually was one of my wife's favorite on the show. What happened? Why are you no longer on Real Housewives of Atlanta?
Well, there's a lot of rumors going around, but, you know, I did tape for the third season, and, you know, I'm not in control of editing. I knew that my scenes would be limited, but, you know, it's just certain things that I wanted to pursue in my career. You know, I've always been a writer, and I had acted in several things before the Housewives of Atlanta came on, and, it, there's a time and season for everything, so, you know, I wanted to just hop off the train before it wrecks.
So it sounds like you've taken a few safety classes along the way to know, you know, where accidents may be. So will you be doing traffic maybe in another profession?
Hey, you know what? You never know. If they cast me as a traffic controller in a movie, absolutely.
And you talked about getting off before the train possibly wrecked. In the first year, during the reunion show, you got into a little altercation with Kim Zolciak, and it's safe to say Kim's not one of your favorite people. Looking back on that, did you really like the way you were portrayed on the show?
You know what? I have to say this. You know, people would always ask me, is the drama real? And unfortunately, it is. You know, it was for the first season. It was for the second season. And even in the third season, what happens is, you know, the show became just this big phenomenon. I mean, everybody was, like, watching the show everywhere. And, you know, the producers are wanting to stir the pot because they want those ratings. They want to still stay on top. I mean, we were the number one show in our demographic on cable, period, and that's huge. And so, you know, it was reality television then, you know, and so that was a very real moment for me is that, she, you know, she knew which buttons to push. I, you know, of course, editing, I thought it was brilliant because some of the stuff, you're like, it didn't happen like that. And that was a response to XYZ, you know. So it looked
right.
like I was flipping out and it was unwarranted or, you know, but she said some very hurtful things regarding my children. And I'm like, Mama Bear had to protect her cubs, you know. It's like Mama Bear comes out like clawing. So, you know, yeah, I was upset. So, no, do I take it back? No, I'd probably do it again. Of course, if, you know, you can't stand up for your family and your loved ones. My God.
Well, I guess, turning off of what Paul said and hearing you say that the drama is real, but yet the editing sometimes can be portrayed. Also, you know, one of the things that it seems apparent is if you can make yourself a character, even if the drama is real, then you can kind of create it. To me, sometimes looks somewhat not fictional, but there are personalities that are being developed on the show by some people that necessarily aren't really there probably when the lights go out.
You know what? I have to say that on our show, they are who they are. You know, if anything, they may amp it up a bit for the cameras, but they are who they are. And it's unfortunate that sometimes, you know, you have to choose between selling out or just wanting to stay on the show. You know, it was a decision for Bravo and myself that it just wasn't going to work out because I'm just not willing to perform. And if it didn't happen a certain way, it's like, I'm not saying that it didn't happen like that. Like, I mean, if we want to go scripted, let's go scripted. I mean, my goodness,
right.
You know, but
right.
Some people felt the need to put on because they want to stay on the show. If that makes sense, or just take it up a notch.
Is there anybody in particular who did that on the show?
I'd have to say probably all of them. And, you know, Candy is pretty even keel. You know, she's the same all the time pretty much. You know, Kim is pretty much the same. She's crazy. Yeah, she's crazy all the time. So I can't say that she's actually turning it on, turning it off. She's just crazy. Nene, you know, she turns it up a notch and she's, you know, yeah, she has to, you know, feed into that hype of who she's become, so they want her to bring it and she's going to deliver, so, and they expect her to.
And speaking of Nene, it seemed like you guys had a fairly close relationship on the show. Was Nene one of the ones you were the closest to on the show?
Well, let's see, I met Sheree first, and so, because I didn't know any of these women before I even got on the show, so they're not people that I would have chosen to hang out with. You know, but, you know, they were castmates, and I met Sheree first, and, you know, Sheree is all about herself, and it, you know, that's okay sometimes, but it just doesn't work in relationships, whether it's a relationship with a guy or girlfriends when you're just looking out for yourself. You're just an opportunist. So, you know, that's her MO, but for Nene, I thought, at least with Nene, when I saw her, you know, at first I thought it was just kind of rude how she was, you know, teasing her friend about the limo. But then as I got to know her, I was like, well, you know, at least she's speaking her mind. And, you know, at least with her, I can see the knife in her hand opposed to Sheree hiding it in her boot. So, I mean, you know, you just have to respect that when people are vocal. So then I think I was drawn to the fact that she was very vocal about what it is she felt. And so, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be a great friend, you know.
So take us through the casting process then. Like, so how does one become a Real Housewife?
Well, you know, there was a girl that Nene knew, and I forget her name was Carla, and she was the first person to actually, be approached or. You know, yeah, approached about the Housewives of Atlanta, and I guess she gave them Nene's name. And so then when they saw Nene, they were like, oh, my God, she's a riot, you know. And so they said, let's check it, you know, take a look at her friends. And at that time, Nene was like, okay, take a look at, you know, Deshaun and Sheree and Kim. And so that's how those girls got casted. and they were looking for another housewife. And I've been in Atlanta for a while now, and I've been in the industry. And so there was, you know, my name was thrown around several times, and they were like, well, have you seen Lisa Wu? Have you talked to Lisa Wu? And they're like, well, who is this Lisa Wu? You know, and my publicist at the time, April Love, called me and said, hey, you know, would you like to be on this show? And I heard about the Orange County franchise, and I, you know, me being a businesswoman, I'm like, you know what, that's a great platform to advertise your businesses for free. Why not?
Well,
so,
and
that's my whole, you know, agenda.
But it's very, I mean, it's very interesting that you say that, and I mean, I give you credit for at least recognizing that, like you said, these are franchises, and you become an independent licensee of a mini franchise. And although you have to at some point weigh whether the franchise is worth the risk of embarrassment, but it's interesting to hear someone say that.
You know, it's just, you know, it has, it's, I mean, pros and cons. It really does. You know, I knew going on that it would bring more exposure to what it was that I was doing and had already started doing before the cameras came around. But also, you know, it is very intrusive. People, you know, feel like they know you. They feel like they have the right to every piece of personal information about you. And based on what they're seeing on television, not realizing that they're editing the best parts, you know.
Right. And
I mean,
speaking of that, how was it being in front of the camera and having the cameras in your face 24/7?
You know, for some of the other girls, I'm sure they were excited, you know, and just happy to be on television. I had, you know, been on television before. I had hosted a, you know, show on UPN called The Industry for a couple of years and shot a movie. And so it wasn't new to me, but of course reality television was just a little, it was different. It was weird and odd, but then after a while, I mean, come on, we were having glasses of wine. You forget the cameras are there and you're like, oh my God, what did I say? You know, you kind of forget. It's crazy as it seems because it's a big crew and lights and everything, but you know, once you're drinking wine, you just kind of loosen up a little bit.
And on the show, at some point in the show, there was a talk of you and your husband, Ed Hartwell, who former Ravens, former Atlanta Falcon, and now plays for the Las Vegas team in the UFL. There was talk
right.
of you guys of possibly having a baby and working on a baby. Is there anything to report on that front?
Well, you know, I'm doing several movies now, and so it's like you have to strike when the iron is hot. You really do. And as much as I love a little girl, I do have three boys. My older boys weren't allowed to be taped on the show. So it
right.
wasn't like I only have one child and that's it. You know, I have three boys, and I would have loved to have a girl and maybe in the future. But I'm filming this movie that Bill Duke is directing, and I'm doing martial arts in the film, and it's called 6713. I believe Tyrese is in the film. Then Wilfield. I'm sure there's some other names. I'm just not privy to all that information. But and then I'm working on a project with Charles Dutton, and it's a
okay.
1 hour drama type thing where I'm playing his wife. So my hands are pretty full.
So no time for a baby at this point.
Yeah, hey, you know what? I have time for my three boys right now. My God, and
right.
you know, trying to balance home life and working with those films, and you know, we just finished the. You know, our book, When the Cake is Made, myself and Miyasha Coleman, we wrote this book, and we're bringing it to the big screen. So, yeah, my plate is pretty full.
And in general, you said you have a bit role on Real Housewives of Atlanta, but do you miss having that prominent role on the show?
Actually, I don't, and I've gotten so much great feedback from my peers that are in film and television. And they're like, oh my God, thank God you left that show. And, you know, and really when you're an actress, you can't stay on too long because no one will take you serious. You know, there were parts I went out for commercials, and I'm so well known on that show. You know, I remember because even EJ acts, you know, he's getting callbacks and all this other stuff. So, you know, we went on an audition together and they gave me a fake husband because, of course, Ed wasn't in town. So, you know, they were like, they're great. But the problem is, you know, everyone knows her and that child, and they're like, that's not Ed. So before the commercial's over, they didn't even grasp the concept of the commercial because they're trying to figure out that's not Ed, what's going on. It's just kind of weird, you know, that third wall. So it's like you have to get off at some point if you plan on acting. And you know, if you want to be a reality star, fine, stay on there. But that's not really what I was trying to do.
and you talked about your husband, Ed Hartwell. Talk about the difficulty of being married to a professional athlete.
You know, it's not difficult for me, honestly. You know, I guess some women that have not been accustomed to men or the groupies, you know, I was married to Keith Sweat for almost 11 and a half years and have two beautiful boys. So, you know, I'm used to the way that the women act towards these men. And it doesn't bother me. You know, I think it would bother an insecure woman, you know. But I keep myself together, so I'm not really worried.
Well, I mean, you answered the questions very well. I always like to be, to a certain degree, the critical one. I like that answer with regards to the groupies and the way you, so you're going to worry about you, not about anyone else. And again, it's a unique approach. It's a very unique approach to, and I think I'd like to hear your thoughts on what is evolving as a very, the culture is always evolving as seemingly very competitive. These reality shows breed, so does Facebook and Twitter. It breeds, you know, content is ever evolving. And so competition grows with that.
Right, right. And I just think that you have to have a sense of yourself and your self-esteem and confidence. And, you know, in relationships, I believe you give 500%. So my thing is that if I'm taking care of you at home and I cannot talk, I don't want to say anything crazy. And they're like, what did you just say? If you're cooking for your man, you're taking care of him in the bedroom, right? And you're a businesswoman and you're handling everything you could possibly think of. If he steps out, it's because he wanted to, not because he had to. So my thing is, if you step out, it's because you wanted to. And I'm not really worried about the groupies because, I mean, my God, I just don't worry about that. I think maybe wisdom or you know, just experience makes you get to that point to where it's like, I'm not worried about that. If that's what you choose to do, then go ahead.
We're talking to Lisa Wu Hartwell, former Real Housewives of Atlanta, actress and now author. Now, Lisa, you talked about your book, When the Cake is Made. You're writing it with Miasha Coleman. Talk about the book. Tell us a little bit about it.
The book is fiction. It is about three different women, you know, three different disaster weddings and a dress-burning ceremony. And these women are tied together in just a way that you would not possibly imagine. It is a page-turner. You'll probably read it in one day. And we're bringing it to the big screen. You know, it's a lot of drama, a lot of twists and turns. And it's a very compelling story. I think that, you know, men will enjoy it. Of course, women will enjoy it because there's drama in it. But, you know, we're excited about bringing it to the big screen.
And what's the inspiration? Is there an inspiration behind this story?
Well, you know, it's about real. You know, when I came up with the title, When the Cake is Made, initially it was When the Cake is Already Made. And then, you know, I started writing it with the characters and everything. It's just, you know, in relationships, or sometimes people will stay in relationships for so long, and then all of a sudden they have this awakening that they don't want to tolerate certain things, but now you've waited too long. So I used the analogy of baking a cake. I said it's like baking a cake and wanting to change the ingredients. It's too late. If you're not willing to accept certain things, you need to nip it in the bud right then and there. So it's about learning yourself and respecting yourself and, you know, being true to what you want. And so I believe that when people read the book, you know, I mean, they'll laugh, they'll cry, and they're like, oh, my God, and believe me, they're waiting for the second one. They're like, you kind of left it hanging. I'm like, of course. Yeah.
Now, I was reading in there that you're playing in the movie Mo Ling, the Gwendolyn Mason story. Tell us a little bit about that movie.
That movie is about this lady, and, you know, she's half Asian, and she's been married four or five times, had a really, really rough life, and it's more of an artsy story, you know, very sad story as well, but, you know, it was a challenge for me because I even did this clip, and they, you know, they're going to have to work on that makeup, though. That was just a trailer for it because I looked like I was a Trekkie, like I was, you know, like about to say Beam Me Up Scotty or something. I was supposed to look like I was 70. I was like, look like that at 70, I'm going to just jump off the bridge. I think I was supposed to look 60, but I looked like I was 200. I was like, oh, my God. So, you know, it was a challenging story for me, and I felt connected to her because she had several businesses. You know, she was into real estate, and, you know, she was a club owner, and then, you know, she'd been married and been abused. And, you know, I can relate to a lot of those stories.
now, are you still doing the real estate thing?
I am. I'm a real estate broker, and I don't care how many movies I'm in, I will sell somebody a house. I just believe in giving people a great deal. So whether it's a $100,000 house or if it's a, you know, $50 million house, it doesn't matter. I treat them the same. I just want my clients to be protected, you know, because sometimes they go into that situation not really knowing what they're looking for and the builder's not looking out for them. So I just like to look out for people, and I love looking at houses.
And last season you unveiled your clothing line, Closet Freak. How's things going with the clothing line?
Fabulous. I have a dress collection for the holidays that will be out the first week in December. So if you go to lisawuhartwell.com, you'll see that. And it'll be, you know, I'll have a list of stores that it'll be in. So very, very sexy dresses. And I'm happy that, you know, people will be able to wear it because they were waiting. But, you know, you have to do it the right way.
And so maybe I need to go to lisawuhartwell.com and pick up a dress off the Closet Freak line for my lovely wife. What do you think?
Oh, she would love you for it. I'm serious. She would love you for it. And then if you do that, then I'll have to give you a book and autograph it so you can give it to her.
Lisa, we definitely thank you for stopping by. We definitely appreciate you calling in. We wish you nothing but the best of luck with your book, with your clothing line, with your real estate, and with your acting.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me, and call me anytime. I'd love to chat with you guys.
Take care.
Take care. You too. Good night.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Well, there you go, Paul. I mean, we all know as cheap as you are, you're going to get that two-for-one special.
I'm going to lisawuhartwell.com. I don't know about you. But I'm going to lisawuhartwell.com, and I'm going to give my lovely wife a beautiful dress off that clothing line. I don't know
well,
about
my
you.
Wife,
I can't.
My wife is an addicted shopaholic, so I'm sure she's already on lisawuhartwell.com buying endless product as an admitted shopaholic. So we're going to ask everyone out there to say a prayer for me tonight.
And we're also going to ask everybody to go to lisawuhartwell.com. To check out her new book, clothing line, and any new roles that she may be picking up as an actress. Good to have Lisa on, and definitely very interested to talk to her. We're expected to be joined by Herschel Walker, former NFL star, now mixed martial arts fighter for the Strike Force. And I think he's on the line right now. We're now being joined by former NFL star running back and now Strike Force mixed martial arts fighter, Herschel Walker. Herschel, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Doing great, Herschel. Herschel, we'll get to the fight in a minute. Real quick, you started your career off in the USFL, and you were a guy who dominated the USFL, and you hold a single season professional football rushing record, and for rushing over 2,000 yards. Talk about your time in the USFL.
Well, I really loved it. I enjoyed it a great deal. I thought that it was a great league. Had a lot of great talent in it. You know, you had the likes of Reggie White, the Steve Young, the Jim Kelly, and you know, I loved being in New York. You know, I loved the New York area. And I really, really enjoy being in the USFL.
And like you said, you talked about the talent that was in the USFL. And people tend to forget that guys like Reggie White and Steve Young and Gary Clark and Sam Mills, to name a few. Those were the guys who were there. Talk about the amount of talent that was there in the USFL.
Well, you know, the way I can tell people about the talent is when the USFL went under, the NFL Pro Bowl, which was the following year, was made up of, I think, 65% of the Pro Bowl was USFL guys. So that just tells you the type of talent that the USFL had, that the majority of the Pro Bowl players were USFL guys.
And Herschel, it's interesting you mentioned how the following year, how many USFL, former USFLers, go into the Pro Bowl. How well competitively would the USFL have held up against the NFL, you know, in terms of going, if it would have stayed in a broader, you know, if you weren't being pushed into that NFL?
Well, yeah, I think there was a couple of teams that could have been very competitive. I don't know if all the teams could have been very competitive, but there was a lot. I think there was two or three teams that could have been competitive. And if you think about it, when the USFL went out, the NFL, I think, may have added two or three more teams. So they could have taken maybe the USFL team, but I think there was so much animosity between the USFL and the NFL that the NFL really didn't want to add any more teams. So they ended up adding teams after the USFL went on them. But I think that was a couple of teams that could have been competitive.
And now, Herschel, after the USFL folded, you went on to join the Dallas Cowboys, where you continued your success. Talk about the transition going from the USFL to the NFL.
Well, you know, that was a big transition because there was no doubt the USFL didn't have the quality of talent the NFL had. You know, there were some spots where the USFL was a little bit weaker. But one thing that people don't know about the USFL is the USFL was the reason that the NFL started paying $1 million contract. Before the USFL came about, that was not a player in the NFL making $1 million until the USFL came about. So that was a different in the level of talent because when you step into the NFL, most every position had a very, very tough competitor. Every position, you were not going to find an NFL team that didn't have a tough competitor at that position. So you had to have yourself together.
Right. And, you know, and it's interesting, Herschel, it's interesting because I think you bring up, the salaries of the USFL and you make the jump that the NFL really, that was the draw. Was in order to get players like yourself and the great players from the USFL to stay there, they recognized they had to pay on the same scale that attracted certain players to the USFL. In making that jump, when you say it was different, and you mentioned the depth of the NFL, but for a player like yourself or guys like Steve Young and Reggie White, was it just getting used to a broader league? Or was it more competitive in terms of, the players?
Well, I think it was more competitive in terms of the players, not just broader league, but the players itself. Because, the NFL, they have been around a long time. So the NFL bought a lot of credibility. You know, when you talk about the salary, you really got to talk about the individual player there because the individual player looking what's going to be best for himself. And, some teams pay, on a team, they may pay one or two guys very good money, but then on the whole, some of the guys are not making that type of money. Whereas the NFL, they do the same thing, but the quality of talent is going to be a little bit better.
And you ended up spending 4 years in Dallas, and ultimately you were traded. And I know you get asked about the trade to Minnesota all the time. The Vikings gave up 5 players, 6 draft picks. And things really didn't work out too well for you there. And to your defense, many believe, including myself, that you really weren't used the right way in Minnesota. Talk about your time with the Vikings.
Well, it's so funny. I tell everyone, I think probably one of the most talented teams I ever played on in my life, just sheer talent, was probably my first year in the NFL. I think we had one heck of a talented team, but we didn't play together as a unit. So if you don't play together as a unit, you're not going to win that many games. I think you look at some of the teams right now, you look at the Cowboys where they're playing right now, they're not playing together. They're making too many mistakes. But when I went to Minnesota, I tell you, Minnesota was an excellent place to be. The people there, I've told people many times, I think Minnesota is a hidden secret. That's one of the best places I ever lived in my life. The people were at least, they were so, so nice to me. And like you said, it was a situation that just didn't work out. I think I was coaches didn't like me, and I will be honest about it. When management brought me in, the coaches didn't know anything about it. They didn't know what was going on. So all of a sudden they lose 5 of their guys that's playing for them and lose some of their draft picks, and then they get 1 player. So it was a situation that just didn't work out too well. And I had fun there. The people there were extremely, extremely nice. And I ended up having an opportunity to go play with Philadelphia, which I had a chance to play with Reggie White and Randall Cunningham, which I really enjoyed that.
It's interesting you mentioned this, especially in this week with Minnesota. And I'd like for you, putting yourself in, like you said, the shoes where the coaching staff and the front office, they gave up such a tremendous amount for you. And if anything, it was like built for you to fail. And And look at the situation now that just occurred with Randy Moss in Minnesota, where he's brought in and the coach is, you know, wasn't on board with him. And how difficult is it for players of your caliber who are the franchisees to walk in and day one and be expected to do and bring in, you know, a championship, but there's 10 other guys underneath you?
Well, you know, what it is you know, athletes want to be athletes. All they want to do is go out and perform. They want to play. And, you know, you expect the coaches to want them to play. But in this situation, and I go back to my situation, I just think that the coaches was not happy about it. And, you know, they were just not happy about losing all those draft picks, and the management didn't tell them what was going on, and they were not happy about it. Now, you look at the situation with Randy Moss, and I've said this many times. Now, you know, you can say what you want about Brett Favre. Brett Favre still got the talent to play this game. But then you look at Percy Harvin. You look at Randy Moss. Then you look at, you know, one of the best running backs in the league. And you're going to tell me right now, you put those guys out on the field, you can make your plays vanilla. That means very simple. Those guys are going to score some points. Well, that wasn't happening. So you look at it and say, what's going on? That's got to be the coaches. Because those guys got too much talent and they got too much skill to tell me that you can't put together a great game plan for them to go out and beat people. So there's something else going on besides just the players.
And, Herschel, and speaking of that, if you were utilized a little better in Minnesota, do you think the end result would have been a lot better?
Well, you know, it's hard to say because it's not a one-player game. It's a team game. You know, I could have went out
right.
and performed well and got a lot of great yards and got more yards, but then we still could have been losing. So you really got to say, if the team, we got to perform better. I think if I had performed better and really may have lifted up the team in some ways, maybe it would have been a little bit different. But who knows? But it's got to be a team. And I think that's what is so different about this MMA, and I told someone, I said, what's weird is in football, I can make a mistake. I can make a mistake, and you know, I may have a receiver, I may have an offensive lineman or a quarterback that may cover for me that no one will ever know I made a mistake. But in this MMA fighting, if I make a mistake, you may see me knocked out or you may see me in an arm bar getting hurt out there. So, you know, you really got to be on your P's and Q's.
We're talking to Herschel Walker, former NFL running back and now Strikeforce mixed martial art fighter. And Herschel, eventually you retired in 1997, and you finished your career 8th in all-purpose yardage. With your numbers, in your mind, do you believe you're a Hall of Famer?
Well, there's no doubt I think I'm a Hall of Famer. You know, you talk about I'm 8th in combined yards and everything. I think when I retired, I was even higher. And at the same time,
they're
not
even
counting. You
were 2 when you retired.
Yes, and they're not even counting my USFL yards. They didn't even look at those, which is fine. But then just to be 8th, you're saying, is that not incredible itself? And not only that, they forget about that I think I had over 500 catches. Not too many running backs have that. And so I said, I think I am a Hall of Fame material, but then you know, it's not up to me. It's up to the people that
right.
vote, and that's what is so weird is you get into the politics of it, and that's when it becomes very, very sticky, when you get into the politics of everything.
And you know, Herschel, I mean, so many people know of your attitude, how things just seem not to matter and to bother you the way maybe they should or could other athletes. And sometimes I wonder, because your career, when you look at it, even team by team and year by year, it's definitively a Hall of Fame career. But Herschel Walker, the athlete, and Herschel Walker, the person, was just he was such a positive person, almost as like he was never really – you were never really given the accolades you deserved because you never really looked – you never really sought them. You weren't a flashy guy. You answer questions. You were always polite. You never caused problems. So it's almost as if the body of work you did was passed up because of how nice you were.
Well, you know, there's no doubt. The person that squeaky will get the oil. And was for myself, you know, and not to put anyone else down, I was very blessed in my life. My parents, I'm fortunate that my parents are still alive, but they also taught me a lot of discipline. They taught me a lot of respect. I love the Lord Jesus Christ. And, you know, I'm not going to go out and try to prove that I'm someone else. I'm myself. And at the same time, I've told people many times, when I came into this league, or even when I went to college, I said I want to be a great athlete, whether that's going to be a running back, whether that's going to be a receiver, wherever they put me, I was going to go out there and perform. Because people do not know when I first came to the Cowboys, you know, they had Tony Dorsett, who is considered one of the best running backs ever to play. Well, Coach Landry moved me out, and I played receiver. I played a lot of different positions. And, you know, right before I got out of this game, I was leading the league in kickoff returns. So I wanted to prove that I'm just an athlete. I'm not just a football player. I'm an athlete that can do a lot of different things.
And speaking of that, you being the athlete, you actually went out for the bobsled team. And talk about that experience.
Well, you know, it was something that was very different. You know, Willie Gault, who's from Griffin, Georgia, and Willie Gault also was someone that I've known for years. He played for the Chicago Bears. Willie Gault was, he mentioned something to me about being on a bobsled team, and I just told him I'd do it. Being an athlete, you volunteer, you'll do anything. And I really didn't know what the bobsled was. I didn't really think he was ever going to call me about it. But then when he called me to come up to Lake Placid to try it for the team, I said, okay, I'm going to do it. And I thought I'd go up there not knowing what I was going to do. And I went up there making the team, and I had a chance to be on the Olympic team and then had a chance to be the best pusher for the United States. And I tell you, I've never wanted to cry before in my life until I was at the opening ceremonies. I tell you, I was so blessed to have an opportunity to represent my country. And that's one reason I say all the time that we got to take our hats off to our men and women out of the military, because they are doing something for this country. You know, I've had an opportunity to play football, to do a lot of these different sports, which is great. That's a game. But these guys are laying their life on the line all the time for this country. And I think that is absolutely incredible.
And, Herschel, you were roundly criticized at the time when you decided to try out for the bobsled team, and ultimately when you made the bobsled team back in 1992. Did the criticism at all hurt you?
Not at all, you know, because, you know, when I was growing up, I used to have a speech impediment. I was a little bit overweight. I was a little bit what they call big bone or chubby or fat or whatever you want to call me. But what was strange about all that, at that time, words really hurt me a great deal. But I got over it and learned that, you know what, you can't worry about what people think about you, because those people thinking about you, they're not thinking about themselves. So for myself, I just started doing my thing, not worrying about what people are going to say, because there's always, always going to be someone that's not happy, no matter what you do. I don't care if you're doing something very positive. There's always going to be someone that's not going to be happy.
You know, Herschel, I think it's an interesting segue for you to mention that. And I jumped on, and I kind of interrupted Paul. I want you to talk about how therapeutic, if you will, and how positive it was for you to write your book. I mean, certainly there are millions of people read it, myself included, and it was to read that. I mean, to know Herschel Walker here is this tremendous athlete who's done everything in football and then moves into bobsledding, and to see that this person, and the more we get to hear of you, you're such a positive person, and you've overcome so much, and sometimes it's very interesting to hear like a great person such as yourself speak as the common man.
Well, you know, I think the problem we have is everyone thinks that we're not human. But, you know, everyone falls short of the glory of God. And I think the problem is we all have problems. We all have problems, but some people hide their problems. And I wrote my book to say, God, there's no shame to admit that if you're suffering from something, and, you know, I never drank, never had a drug, but if you're suffering from alcohol or drugs, that may not be your problem, maybe something much deeper. Or if you have a problem, don't be ashamed to admit you have a problem, you know, and not that get on to something that I don't know that much about, but you look at the young man that killed himself in Denver. Now, we don't know the whole situation there, but no one knew what was going on with him. No one knew what was going on with him, but he may have been suffering that no one ever took the time to ask him one day, are you doing okay? I never took the time to spend time with him to see if he's doing okay. And that's what I came out in my book that said, we all have problems, but let's not be ashamed to get those problems taken care of. The embarrassment is to injure yourself or to injure someone else, but you shouldn't be ashamed to get your problem taken care of.
And Herschel, I think it's always interesting in regards to piggybacking off of what you said. For someone such as yourself to come out and do it, one of the things I thought about, certainly when I was reading your book, is you certainly cannot be the only professional athlete, not even now broader in terms of football, professional athlete or celebrity, to be suffering from something that is certainly severe. How was it risky for you in your mind to come out and write, you know, about something that many people believe is a difficult disorder, and people will label you. And I certainly am, you know, trouble with finding the right word, because you don't want it to seem offensive. But it was,
it's not offensive, because people say it's a mental illness, it's anything like that. And I say, you know what, it's not a mental illness. What it is someone, I had a problem. I had a problem that I needed to get taken care of. And, you know, I'm not the only one. You know, you're talking to someone that, you know, people don't even know, or you guys may know, I own a flu company. And I'm probably the largest minority-owned chicken company in the United States. And I've been doing this food company for over 10 years. So when I came out with my book, I was building my company. But I didn't stop building my company. And at the same time, I tell guys all the time, you look at the things I've done on the athletic field. You look at what I continue to do in the business world. You look that I've spoken in front of Congress I don't know how many times on the obesity thing. But then I come right back after doing my book, getting into this MMA world. And I said, guys, that doesn't mean that you have a mental illness. And, you know, I make light of it, but there are some people that are suffering a lot worse than I am that I'm saying, guys, do not be ashamed of it. Come out and try to get help, because I tell them all the time, do our Lord Jesus Christ have a mental illness? Because he said he's the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. To me, those are three different personalities. So, you know, we're not so much different than he is. But what we got to do is quit putting others down and try to build them up. One of the problems we have all the time is putting our kids down. You know, he is no good. You know, he's bad. He's never going to do anything. Why don't you say something positive about it? Why don't you say, you know what, that wasn't right, but you know what, you can do better than that. I got better high hopes for you than that. Why don't we build him up? You know, I have a little boy. He's 11, and he want to be a gymnast. He is working so hard to be a gymnast. He really feels that he's going to be an Olympic gymnast. Well, I assume he's going to grow at my size. And I've never seen an Olympic gymnast, 6'2", 220 pounds. So I've just taken it on myself to say, guys, in the next couple of years, you may see a 6'2", 220-pound gymnast in the Olympics, because I'm not going to tell him he can't do it. Because I believe if I don't tell him he can't do it, he's going to do it. And I think that's what we got to do to our young people. That's what we got to do to our fellow man. Is quit putting them down, build them up, and I think this country is going to be better.
And speaking of that, Herschel, you're a guy at the age of 48. Now you're an MMA. You're well known for your conditioning, man. You're obviously in tip top shape. You're 48 years old. You got a body of a 21 year old. What is the secret?
Well, the secret is just continue to work. I continue to work. You know, I continue just to believe in myself, to love myself. You know, when T.O. say I love me some T.O. All the reporters thought he was arrogant, and I said, you know what, he's correct. You got to love yourself. You got to love who you are, but you got to be willing to pay the price. And what I mean by that, you got to be willing to be the best you can be. You know, life is going to be hard. Life is going to be tough. And I'm not going to say things are always going to go your way. You're going to have some dark days, but just know it's going to be okay. And that's what I do. I just know it's going to be okay. Continue to look up, and I'm going to go up.
And Herschel, talk about the preparation for mixed martial arts. I know you're a black belt in Taekwondo, but talk about the preparation for mixed martial arts in comparison to football. Is it a little harder?
Oh, yeah, it is much harder. It was much harder because, like I said, in football, you know, I can make a mistake, and I have those receivers or those offensive linemen or that quarterback that may cover up for my mistake. But then all of a sudden in mixed martial arts, if I make a mistake, you may see me knocked out or you may see me in an arm bar. And I'll submit it. So you can't make those little mistakes that you can make in football. And at the same time, you know, mixed martial arts is a combination of judo, jiu-jitsu, wrestling, boxing. So it's five different arts rolled up into one. So it's a very difficult sport.
Herschel, why now?
Like I said, we talk about your age. You are age 48. How long do you go with this?
Well, you know, I don't know. And you said, why not? And I said, why not? You know, I've never seen where they said just because you're getting up in age that you should not be able to do anything. I think that's a bunch
right.
of crap. I've told people for many times, the only reason the NFL say you get it too old because they don't want to pay you. Whenever you start getting up in age, people don't realize that the team have to pay you a little bit more than they have to pay a younger guy because of the collective bargaining agreement in the NFL. Well, they start saying you're getting too old when you can still get the job done. When Jerry Rice left San Francisco and went to Oakland, he still led the Oakland team and also led was in the top as a receiver. When Joe Montana
right.
even left the 49 and went to the Kansas City, he still started and played very well. Brett Favre is still performing very well. Last week, even though he may have had a couple of interceptions, he got through for almost 500 yards. So whenever they say that you're getting too old, but that means that they don't want to pay you any more money. So they want to get rid of you because they want to get a younger guy that they can pay less to.
And will this be the way of the future, guys? I mean, you got to have guys like Bernard Hopkins, 45 years old, who's still fighting. Vander Holyfield in his 40s, still fighting. Will this be the wave of the future, guys competing in athletics well into their 40s?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know whether it'll be the wave of the future, or it may just be that we're trying to just let everyone know that, you know, if these guys that's in their 40s have been telling their wives that they're achy and they're sore and they can't do it, that that's not the truth. They can still get up and they can still get the job done. You just got to be willing to work and just do it. You know, that slogan, just do it, is true. You know, things are not going to go your way, but every morning get up, ready to get it going, and just get the job done.
It's interesting, Herschel, because you make mention to, you know, your success in business. You make mention to the Olympic experience, certainly your success in the NFL and the USFL. And now, you know, as Paul says, age 48, you walk into what many will perceive as, this is not exactly, and you even said, it's not an easy sport to be in. One wrong move and you could have some serious injury. Some say it's a thrill-seeker mentality. My question is, I mean, what's there for Herschel to prove in the MMA environment, other than to himself?
Well, you know, that's what it is. It's proving it to myself. Always, when I came into college football, when I left home and went to Georgia, I said I wanted to be a great, great athlete. I never said I wanted to be a great football player. That's what people didn't understand. I wanted to be a great athlete. You know, when I was in Georgia, I ran track as well as played football. I fought in martial arts tournament as well as played football. And when I went into the USFL, you know, I still was doing martial arts as I was playing football. When I went to Dallas, I was doing martial arts, doing different things as I was playing football. Well, I've always wanted to be considered as a great athlete. Well, I've had the opportunity now to step into a sport, which I think is one of the toughest sports out there, and to compete. And I'm competing at the highest level, you know, in my camp there, AKA in San Jose. I got some of the best fighters in the world, and I'm having the opportunity to do that.
You know, and Herschel, one quick thing, because it bears note, and I think you'll speak on it, which is, does this sport keep you humbled? Does this, because it's one of the things we keep hearing from you,
does.
It's a very humble guy. And I think this sport, like, from what I hear from you, is it's again, you're trying to find things centered around pieces of your life that will ground you and keep you very humble.
Well, this sport does keep you humble because, you know, I'm a fifth-degree black belt in Taekwondo. But when I first came to AKA, I left that black belt outside because I was stepping into a whole different arena. And I stepped into that gym just like I was a brand-new fighter, not knowing anything. And, you know, when I was in the gym the very first week, I had a 175-pound guy putting me in an armbar because I didn't know exactly what I was doing. And that's what
right.
You have to be humble. You have to have respect. And that's what I did.
And, Herschel, you signed with Strikeforce back in 2009, you had your first fight in 2010. I heard something interesting on that telecast where you stated to one of the announcers talked about it, that if MMA was around when you were younger, you would have chosen that over football. Talk about that.
Well, you know, it's a sport that I think is a very fierce sport. I absolutely love it. And, you know, the money ain't in it like it was in football. But I think if it was around during football, it may have been something that I may have jumped in and gave it a shot. You know, I'm that type of athlete that's always doing something people don't expect, and I do it all the time.
And you're definitely doing it now. I mean, and in the past, Herschel, you've been known for the push-ups and the sit-ups. Have you added other stuff to your workout regimen?
Well, you know, I'm doing all the dips, all the type of conditioning that I've always have done, but the push-ups, the sit-ups are things that I continue to do, so I'm always doing it.
And it's obviously by the way your body is looking, it's definitely paying off. Now, your fight is on December the 4th at the Scott Trade Center in St. Louis, and it airs on Showtime at 10 o'clock. This bout, you're fighting against Scott Carson, a former WEC fighter. What can we expect from Scott Carson, and what can we expect from you in this fight?
Well, you know, Scott has been fighting me. He's been training for a long time. You know, I wanted a guy that got more experience than the very first guy I fought. But, you know, I didn't know he's going to have this much experience. Scott, he's been training for a long time. I think he's had about five fights. He's 4-1. And the one fight that he did lose to, he lost to a guy that was undefeated. So I expect Scott, he's a very good wrestler, very good ground guy. And I expect him to come out and ready to fight because, you know, being who I am, you know, there's no doubt I have a target on my head that people want to go in there, they want to take me out. But for myself, I expect me to go out and I'm going to be on offense. You know, I go out, I said, this is not a game. This is a sport that I love. So it's going to be a great fight.
And you beat, in your first fight, you fought Greg Nagy. Talk about the rush that you had going into that fight and being in the actual cage during a fight.
You know, I told someone, I was, you know, when you're walking down that little ramp and you step into that cage, you hear that click. You know this is for real. It's for real because the guy across from me, he's not like the guy in the gym that, you know, you're wearing headgear, you have your different pads on. This guy here is ready to take your head off. This guy here want to take you down. He want to beat you up. And so you got to be ready to go. So that rush of me saying, hey, guys, it's time now to step it up. It's time to get it on. And I said, it's time to go for it. So and that's what I wanted to do.
Now, Herschel, we every time we have a fighter or on our show, we like to ask for a little prediction. So can we get a prediction on December 4th on what's going to happen?
December 4th, Herschel Walker is going to be 2-0. He's going to win his fight, and he's going to win it impressively because one of the things is I say I gotta be a little bit better than I was the last time, and not taking anything away from Scott, but you know I come to win. I don't do anything to lose. I come to win.
And, Herschel, we wish you nothing but the best of luck on December 4th, and we thank you for stopping by here tonight, sir. It was greatly appreciated, and, again, nothing but the best of luck in this upcoming fight.
Well, thank you. Thank you, guys, for having me on.
Oh, take care, Herschel.
All right. Yeah,
Herschel Walker,
you.
Former NFL running back, now mixed martial arts fighter. And the show is on December 4th at the Scott's Trade Center in St. Louis. It's going to air live on Showtime at 10 o'clock. The main event in that particular fight is Dan Henderson going up against Babalu Sobral in a light heavyweight bout. Also, Paul Daly faces Scott Hands of Steel Smith. You have Herschel Walker going up against Scott Carson. You have Ruthless Robbie Lawler going up against Matt DeLaw Lindland. And last, you have Antonio Bigfoot Silva against Valentin Overeem. And those are five big bouts on that Showtime card. And the main event is Babalu Sobral against Dan Henderson. So that should be a great card on Showtime. And it should be interesting to see what Herschel has in store for that fight. We're now being joined by former NFL.
It was great to talk to Herschel Walker. Good to have him on the air. It was Herschel Walker is an interesting guy, and I wish him nothing but the best of luck in that fight. It'll be interesting to see how that fight transpires. And again, the card is on December 4th at 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Also, it's going to be taped late on the West Coast, so it'll be 10 o'clock on the West Coast. And Herschel Walker against Scott Carson on Showtime. The fight will take place in St. Louis at the Scott's Trade Arena. And the main event, light heavyweight bout, Dan Henderson against Babalu Sobral. And that should be an interesting contest, and that should be an interesting card. And I think we're all looking forward to that card. We're also looking forward to Herschel Walker and what's going on with Herschel Walker and see if Herschel Walker can get it done in mixed martial arts. So that definitely should be interesting to see what goes on there. The numbers to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/PCANT. That's blogtalkradio.com/PCANT. You can send email messages to the show at goforward.gant@gmail.com. That's goforward.gant@gmail.com. And we talked about Michael Vick and his performance on Monday night, and we talked about what's going to happen with him at the end of the regular season and whether or not the Eagles are going to pay him now or are going to pay him later or somebody else is going to pay him. And if you look around the league and if you look at the NFL right now, I mean, granted, a lot of things could change. I mean, you have the uncertainty with the collective bargaining agreement. And that's going to come up at the end of the year. So there's no telling what kind of rules will be in effect when or if Michael Vick becomes a free agent. But if you look around the league, there are a list of teams that definitely could use a Mike Vick. Maybe the situation in Washington, maybe the Washington Redskins could use Michael Vick. You look at Minnesota, they're going to be in need of a quarterback. You look at the Carolina Panthers, they're going to be in need of a quarterback. You look at the San Francisco 49ers, they're going to be in need of a quarterback. If you look at the Arizona Cardinals, they're going to be in need of a quarterback. The Buffalo Bills, they're going to be in need of a quarterback. The Cleveland Browns, they will be in need of a quarterback. Cincinnati Bengals, Carson Palmer's not playing that well. They're going to be in need of a quarterback. Tennessee, questionable situation with Vince Young. They may be in the need of a quarterback. And if you look at the AFC West, I guess the Raiders, they may be in need of a quarterback. The Chiefs, I'm not too sold on Matt Castle. So they may also be in need of a quarterback. And the Denver Broncos with Kyle Orton and Brady Quinn, they may be in need of a quarterback as well. So basically what I'm saying to you and listing all the teams who may be in need of a quarterback is that the market is going to be there for Michael Vick. The market is there for this guy. The market is definitely there for this guy. So it should be interesting to see what happens when this thing is all said and done. It should be very interesting to see what happens. I mean, the reality of it is this. Michael Vick is going to get paid. He is going to get paid. It's all depending on if it's going to be with the Eagles or somewhere else. But he's getting paid. So, and if you're the Eagles, you have an interesting situation. And almost a situation similar to what the Chargers experienced a few years back with Drew Brees and Phillip Rivers. You got to make a decision here. And to me, if you look at the performance of the Michael Vick, it becomes very obvious that the decision that they have to make is to bring back Michael Vick. You really do not have a choice here. If he leads this team to the playoffs, leads them deep into the playoffs, and possibly to a Super Bowl, but if he leads them to the playoffs and possibly deep into the playoffs, you got a decision here, interesting decision. And the way I look at it, I think the decision might be pretty easy. So the question mark is, are you willing to bank on Michael Vick staying out of trouble? Are you willing to bank on Michael Vick being able to stay healthy with his running style? I mean, those are the things that you're going to have to bank on here. And those are the things you're going to have to look at in terms of bringing Michael Vick into the situation and bringing Michael Vick and handing essentially Michael Vick a blank check. I mean, those are the things you're going to have to look into and you're going to have to worry about with this guy. But I am of the opinion that I think maybe the guy maybe changed. And it's too early, but maybe it's more hope than in terms of, maybe it's more hope on my part because you can't really definitively say that this guy is going to keep his nose clean. I mean, maybe it's more hope on my part. And then that could be the case. And so, but I'm thinking that this guy can keep himself out of trouble. And I think hopefully this guy will keep himself out of trouble. And I wish him nothing but the best, and I hope he can ultimately get paid and get himself out of that debt situation and ultimately put him in a good position and ultimately lead the Eagles, who are a team that I'm a fan of, back or to the Super Bowl. And with those weapons, with all the weapons that he has, young weapons, he, in terms of a pure football move, you would think he would resign with the Eagles. But in terms of money, who knows what happened? What will happen there, and what a team will offer him? And who knows if the Eagles step up to the plate and re-sign the guy? But with the uncertain labor situation, I guess if the labor situation is the same as it is now, you will probably expect the Eagles to franchise Michael Vick in that particular situation. But again, we don't know what the labor agreement is going to look like, and we don't even know if we'll have a season next year with the whole collective bargaining situation. But you would think with the money that these owners are making, the popularity of the sport of football, that these guys will get this thing done. And ultimately, these guys will do right. Both sides will do right by each other. And ultimately, football will be played in 2011. You would think. You would definitely think. And also, there was big news out of Washington Monday night before the start of the game. Donovan McNabb signed a 5-year extension worth $70 million. And you say $70 million. $70 million? How is this guy worth $70 million? Wow. What is wrong with the Redskins? And what came out at first was the deal was worth 5 years, $78 million. And it could be worth $78 million if Donovan is active for every game in those 5 years. More than likely, that won't happen. Not more than likely. That definitely will not happen. So if you look at that, and you look at the situation with Donovan, you saw 5 years, $78 million. P.O. tweeted about it and talked about how crazy the deal was and all that. His tweet was, how do you justify a $78 million contract with this type of performance? He's referring to Donovan's performance in the game against the Philadelphia Eagles. But if you look at that whole situation with T.O. and talking about Donovan and with Donovan's contract, if you look at 5 years, $78 million, on the surface, you were saying the Redskins are crazy. And then initially the report was $40 million of that guaranteed. Again, you were saying the Redskins are crazy. But as the deal breaks down, and if you really look at the deal, essentially what the Redskins are doing is they're giving Donovan a $3.5 million signing bonus for this year. And next year, if he's on the roster, he'll get a $10 million bonus plus his $2.5 million salary. So you talk about $12.5 million and possibly more with incentives. So if the Redskins were to get rid of Donovan McNabb at the end of the year, all they would have to pay is that $3.5 million, which they already paid. That's it. And if you look at the deal, more than likely, if the Redskins do not have another answer at the quarterback position, more than likely Donovan will come back there and will get his $12.5 million, that salary and bonus included. So if you look at that, that's the more likely scenario. And if you look at Donovan's situation in Washington, you look at that situation, you're saying to yourself, the guy doesn't really have a lot of help around him. He really doesn't have a lot of help around him. I mean, you look at what's going on there in Washington. You're saying, I mean, there's not a lot of weapons. Joey Galloway is one of your wide receivers. Santana Moss, decent wideout. Have Anthony Armstrong on the other side. Guy came out of the Arena League. So, you know, again, he's a project in a lot of ways. But if you look at the weapons surrounding Donovan McNabb, not a lot. It's definitely not a lot there. Not a lot there. So you can definitely understand and see why he is struggling a little bit there in Washington. He doesn't have a lot to work with. and his weapons, doesn't have a lot of weapons around him. Does not have a lot of weapons around him. So if you look at that, you're saying to yourself, I mean, would it be in Donovan's best interest to move on at the end of the year? Would it be in his best interest? I thought he'd stick in Washington and try to make the situation good, make it a good situation for himself and his teammates. Does he do that? Does he do that? And you look at Donovan's stats from a year ago, 22 touchdowns, 10 picks, over 3,500 yards passing. You look at his stats a year ago, decent numbers, definitely decent numbers. But you also have to look at this when looking at those stats. Look at the cast that he had around him in Jackson, and Macklin, and Yvonne, and Selleck, and McCoy. He had a lot of weapons around him. He definitely had a lot of weapons around him. And it helped his situation. It definitely helped his situation. But if you look at what he's working with now in comparison to what he had last year in Philadelphia, I mean, it's kind of like night and day. I mean, the talent that he is surrounded with in Washington is not good. And if you look at Washington, this is a team that only won 4 games last year. They have matched that total already. This team is 4-5. And I mean, maybe this one thing you have to learn about the NFL is a week-to-week league. And what I mean by that, 1 week, oh, you're saying, oh, the Eagles, best team in football. Next week, Eagles, let's say the Eagles stake up the joint, then you start to question that. 1 week, oh, the Giants are the best team in football. This week, they come out and they get smoked by the Cowboys. See, 1 week, you're saying all these things. 1 week, the Cowboys just got smoked by the Packers. Now the Cowboys come back and they blow out the Giants. So it's a week-to-week league. And anything can happen from week to week. And so maybe this is a thing where with the Redskins, this could be the type of game that they take off from. They could take off from this type of game, if you think about it. They possibly could take it. Maybe it's just one of those games, man, where you run into – it was just one of those games. Maybe it's just one of those games for this team. It was just one of those games for the Washington Redskins where everything they did not go right. Everything they did was wrong. Maybe it's one of those games. And maybe they can take off from here and make some kind of run. You look at the last – 7 games. Schedule's not easy. The last 7 games is not easy in Washington. You're talking about at Tennessee next week. Then you go to Minnesota. Then you have Minnesota coming to FedEx Field, which is an opportunity there for the Redskins. They go to New York and play the Giants. They go, then Tampa Bay comes to FedEx Field. And Tampa Bay's a top team in the NFC. I don't know how good they truly are, but they are 6-3. The Giants, they're a team that a year ago was 6-2, and they just fell off the face of the earth and played horribly down the stretch. So, and they still have the Cowboys in their schedule. They have Jacksonville, which who a team that's playing well, maybe a tough game. That's at Jacksonville, and they have the Giants again. Their remaining schedule is not it's not easy, but it's definitely manageable. So, I mean, maybe this is the type of game where okay. A team gets smoked, and from there they say, you know what? They decide that they're going to get this thing done. They come together and they make things happen for themselves. Maybe this is that game for the Washington Redskins. Maybe it's that game where they just get beat up, blown out, and then they make that comeback and then they finish the year strong. Maybe. Maybe it's a wake up call for the franchise and for the team. Maybe. Maybe Donovan wants to prove that, you know what? I deserve this extension. And also, I deserve that possible $12.5 million in 2011, and I deserve to have that with the Washington Redskins. I deserve all these things, and I want to prove to you that I deserve all these things. And you look at Donovan's performance on Monday night, not a great performance. I mean, by the time he blanked, the team was down 28-0. But, I mean, not a strong performance by him, and a performance that, 3 interceptions, 1 which was returned for a touchdown. But he did throw for almost 300 yards. Team did put up 28 points. But again, if you look at of that particular game, by times you could blink, by times you blink, it was 28-0. By times you blinked, it was actually 35. You blinked again, it was 35-0. So if you look at that, I mean, how much of a chance did Donovan really have in that football game? How much of a chance did he really have? And granted, again, didn't play well. Three picks. Like I said, three picks, one return for a touchdown. So not a strong performance by Donovan, and not one of his better performances. Not at all. But, again, Donovan has the rest of the year to prove to the Redskins, prove to himself, and if he doesn't prove it to the Redskins, maybe even prove to the league, or if the Redskins decide to get rid of him, prove to the league that he can still play, that he can still get it done this league, that he is the guy that led his team to 5 NFC title games. He is that guy. He is that guy. He's still that guy. It should be interesting to see how this thing plays out. But I said it before earlier, so I want to go back to the Eagles for a second now. I said it earlier in the show. If ever, this Eagles team, if I look at the NFC here today, this Eagle team could go to the Super Bowl. And at the least, could possibly find a way to get home field advantage throughout the playoffs. It's possible, man. It's possible. Don't discount it. With Michael Vick playing the type of football that he is playing, with the defense stepping up, this team and the explosion that you have on offense with this team, you could see the Eagles in the Super Bowl. And it's not out of the realm of possibility. It's definitely not out of the realm of possibility. And I think about when I looked at the start of this season, big McNabb guy, I was one of the guys who wanted to keep him in Philadelphia. But I look at the start of this season, I didn't expect this from the Philadelphia Eagle team. Granted, and I didn't expect this from Michael Vick. When I saw Michael Vick in the preseason, one thing I will say, it was obvious that he had his explosion back. He had what made him electric. He had that back. It was obvious he had that back. He had it back. So I saw that, but in terms of the passing side of things, he was ordinary. But again, it's a preseason game, and you can only read so much into it. But when I look at the guy, I didn't see this coming. I don't think anybody saw this coming. But if I did see this coming, obviously I would have been okay with trading Donovan McNabb. Obviously. And I figured Kevin Cobb would be the guy for the year. He would go through the year and, you know, growing pains. He'll go through the growing pains. Ultimately, he'll become a decent quarterback. And ultimately, this year would be about grooming Kevin Cobb and ultimately having Kevin Cobb be successful for not only this year, but mostly for the upcoming years, 2011, 2012, and so on and so forth. That's what I thought about in terms of this particular year. But now, with Michael Vick, with the defense playing all right, the Super Bowl is a possibility. Is a possibility. And many, and in terms of Michael Vick, many teams seem to forget that in Atlanta, he led the team to the playoffs twice. He went into Green Bay and beat the Packers. And at the time when he beat the Packers, no one wanted Green Bay in the playoffs. No one wanted Lambeau at Lambeau Field in the playoffs. At the time. No one won there. That was at the time. And he went in there and won. Ironically enough, he ran into Donovan McNabb in the next round and lost. And then he led his team in 2004, he led his team to the NFC title game. And ironically enough, he ran into Donovan McNabb. But what I'm saying here, this guy has a pedigree. This guy's proven a winner, that he's a winner. Say what you will about the guy. Say about the guy who came late to practices and
didn't really dedicate himself to the team. Say what you will about the guy, but he found a way to win football games. And now he's putting this thing all together, putting the talent with experience, and ultimately you have something beautiful here with Michael Vick. We want to thank Lisa Wu Hartwell for stopping by today. Make sure you go to LisaWuHartwell.com and check out her clothing line and all the good things with Lisa Wu Hartwell. And also, we want to thank Herschel Walker. His fight is on December 4th at Scott's Trade Union Arena in St. Louis, Missouri. Our show time will air at 10 o'clock. And you can listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/begin. That's blogtalkradio.com/begin, where you can listen to this show and other shows. Thank everybody for listening. Thanks for everybody for calling. And see you later. Take care. Have a nice night. Bye.